Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Creative Kindergarten Podcast. My name is Amanda, and I'm an early childhood educator in Ontario, Canada. And this podcast is a place where I talk about all things kindergarten. I pick a topic for the week, and I share my thoughts, my learning, my reflections around that topic. For this week's episode, I wanted to talk a little bit about provocations, how I set them up, where I find materials, the things, how I plan them, all that good stuff around provocations. I get asked a lot about those, and it's probably one of my favorite things about my job. I love setting up provocations for my students to explore. So I thought I would do a podcast episode kind of going over those. I also have a blog post that I will link in the show notes that talks a little bit more about provocations and what those, and you can also like see pictures of them done. You can also follow me over on Instagram. I share like tons of provocations that I set up on my page there. Before I jump into this week's episode, I wanted to let you know that if you are listening to this podcast episode the day that it comes out on Tuesday, we are having a Teachers Pay Teachers back to school bonus sale on August 30th and 31st. You can save up to 25% off everything in my store using the code BTSBONUS22. I will link in the show notes my store if you are looking for things for back to school. And there's 2 days for the sale. And then I don't think TPT is going to have another sale for a few more months. At least historically, they haven't had any more sales for a few more months after this one. So if you are looking for some back to school shopping, now is the time to go shop over on Teachers Pay Teachers and in my Creative Kindergarten store. All right, let's jump into this week's topic about provocation. So first of all, let's just like define what I think a provocation is. There's lots of different vocabulary, lots of different like terms that are used around this kind of thing. And so I want to make sure that we have an understanding of what I'm talking about when I'm saying a provocation. This doesn't mean that like it's the right definition or the only definition. It's just my understanding of it. So a provocation for me is when I am choosing materials and setting up materials for my students to explore. So it's very open-ended for them. I, as the educator, I'm choosing the materials, but this I have no like end goal for what they are going to be learning from the materials or what I want them to do with the materials. I'm just setting it up for them to explore, to ask questions, to learn, to dive into it. I'm using it as a way to spark their curiosity or their wonders. And it's not, I don't necessarily like have an end goal in mind as opposed to, let's say, like a math or a literacy center or a science center that I might have set up with like a very like clear skill that I want students to work on. When I'm setting up a provocation, it's more about letting students explore the materials that I have set up for them. I'm not saying that they can't bring other materials to use for the provocation, or they can't, you know, move the materials or take away materials. It's just that I have chosen some materials to set out for my students to explore. Others, people might refer to them as invitations for learning. There's like lots of different terms around that, but that's what I'm talking about. I'm going to give an example. I have set up tons of provocations. I've done one of the later ones that I did last year was with a daffodil plant, brought a daffodil plant into the classroom, and students were able to look at it, explore, and take apart the leaves, take a look inside the inside of the daffodil flower, all those kinds of things. So that is what I'm talking about when I'm talking about a provocation. The other thing I want to make clear about a provocation, when I'm using a provocation, I am not... This is something that I'm hearing a lot of educators saying. I'm not starting an inquiry. I find that the term inquiry has now like just taken the spot of the term theme. So, you know, we're moving away from like themed-based learning. So, you know, I don't know, September we learn about apples, or October, whenever we learn about apples historically. So my theme for September is apples. And we, as a play-based inquiry-led educators, are moving away from using themes. great. So now what I'm finding, though, is that instead of saying, oh, it's my Apple theme, educators are starting to say, oh, I'm starting an inquiry about apples. And that is not what I'm talking about. That is not, I'm not starting an inquiry. I, as an educator, I'm not starting an inquiry for my students. What I can do is present my students with materials that I've chosen for them to explore, and I allow them to explore those materials, and that might spark some inquiry learning from my students. So if we're exploring a dried out sunflower, we did this last year, and they're exploring this dried out sunflower, they're picking out the seeds, they're talking about what they're seeing, they have questions about the sunflower. And so we start talking about, well, why is there seeds that, like, how are you able to pick out seeds out of this sunflower? Why do you think it has seeds? What do you think is going to happen with these seeds? And we start asking questions and develop our understanding of it. It might lead to an inquiry around life cycles and an understanding of the needs of plants and, you know, the importance of sunflowers and plants in general in our environment. This could lead to talking about like the life cycles and lead to talking about the natural world in other ways. That might happen when I set up a provocation, but it also might not. My students might not care about this sunflower that I've put out here. And so I am not starting an inquiry. Instead, I'm going to try to provoke some curiosity, some spark, some interest with my students. And then that might lead to inquiry learning, but that is going to be child-led. That is going to be led by my students, not by me. So we have to be careful with how we are thinking about things. And just because I brought in a sunflower, it doesn't mean that I'm transforming my whole classroom into a sunflower-themed classroom and like every center is going to be about sunflowers. I'm going to have like sunflower math centers and sunflowers added to, something added to this literacy bin and then have a sunflower farm in our dramatic play. No, that's not what I'm doing. Instead, what I'm doing is trying to spark their curiosity about the natural world, spark some new learning, some new understandings, see where that leads me. So I'm not starting an inquiry. I'm setting up a provocation and watching and listening to see where that leads. I hope that makes sense. So that, you know, we aren't just redefining themed based learning with inquiry based learning, and we're not misusing inquiry in that way. I have seen that kind of starting to pop up here and there. I've talked about it before, but it just as a reminder also to myself. Sometimes it's like, oh, I'd love to start an inquiry about this. But again, the inquiry doesn't come from me. It comes from the students. So when I am planning an inquiry, So when I do start planning for a provocation, like where do I get inspiration? Where do I get the materials and all that kind of stuff? Normally, a lot of my provocations come from things from the environment, from the natural world. So it might be, there's like multiple ways I could be inspired or think of bringing a provocation to my students. One could be my students themselves. So in the fall, we always have very angry wasps in our kindergarten yard. I don't know if this is a universal experience for a lot of educators, but for some reason in the fall, we always get nasty wasps in our kindergarten yard. There's always at least one sting. I got stung twice one year. It was not a pleasant experience. And so students have lots of questions about these wasps. They get worried about these wasps. We're often wondering why these wasps are hanging around. Why are they trying to sting us? All those great questions that kids naturally have about things in their environment. My teaching partner happened to have old wasp nests that had been vacated ages ago and were kind of dried out. And so we brought them into the classroom and set up a provocation so that students could explore wasp nests and could explore learning about wasps in a very safe way. So the provocation was sparked by some of the curiosity that the children had. And as educators, we were able to expand that and take that back into our classroom and provide opportunities for our students to engage in it safely. We took the wasp nest, we cut it in half. We let students look at the, what are they called? The combs inside? I can't remember what they're called. On the inside, they were able to ask questions about what they were seeing, make predictions, and learn more about wasps and why they are actually really important to our natural world, even though, you know, they were very aggressive and we still didn't like being stung by wasps, but now we had a better understanding of why we had so many wasps and why they're important to our natural world. So that's just an example of when student questioning and student curiosity sparked a provocation that was brought inside. It could be my own curiosity or my own renderings or my own questions about the natural world that get brought inside. If you're, you know, out and about and you see something cool on the ground, some really big pine cones, some cool leaves, I don't know, I'm trying to think of anything out there. So if there's something that you notice about the natural world, you can also be somebody who brings in that curiosity into your classroom. For me, I love flowers and plants. So I was trimming my, one of my plants, my indoor plants. It's called a Monstera andensoni, if you have any idea about plants, but it's basically a trailing plant that has what's called fenestrations in it. So there's like holes in the leaves. And so I was trimming it because it was getting far too long. And, I was thinking about how I was going to propagate that plant to make a new plant. And I thought, oh, wouldn't that be cool to bring this into the classroom so that my students could see it and we could talk about how I can make a new plant out of just the cuttings of an old plant. And so that just started an inquiry where I brought in, not started an inquiry, sorry, started a provocation where I brought in those leaves and I set it up on a table and we brought out a USB microscope and we took a close look at the leaves and we were talking about why the leaves have holes in them, what was that about, and we ended up putting them in water and watching the roots grow out of the cuttings. Eventually my teaching partner took it home so that she could have a new plant. So it can be started by students, it could be started by me, it could be started by something that you guys find outside. You're doing a nature walk and you find something along the way and you want to bring it back into your classroom. We went out and we tried to find as many different leaves as we could, and then we brought them back into our classroom to observe the differences between the different types of leaves that we were able to find. There's lots of different opportunities for you to bring things from the natural world back into the classroom. My teaching partner also found some antlers that had fallen off some of the deer or whatever. Are they deer? Off of the deer and near her parents' property. And so she brought in some antlers for our students to look at. You know, there's a lot of the time I try to bring in the material for students to be able to touch, to explore, to look closely at. Sometimes that's not always possible. My students were like really interested in learning about reindeer and had questions about reindeer a few months ago. I can't bring a reindeer into a classroom, obviously. So we found reindeer toys. I'm not like talking about Rudolph, like the red-nosed reindeer, like actual caribou reindeer. And so we brought in some different models of reindeer. We were able to look closely at some pictures of reindeer. We found a reindeer live cam that students were able to watch. And so we were able to bring like reindeer into our classroom without actually bringing in reindeer to the classroom. So you can also find other ways. My students were super interested in talking about spiders, and I'm not bringing a spider into my classroom. I understand they are great for our environment. They are an important part of our ecosystem. I don't want them in my classroom though. So again, we found some spider dolls for students to, or toys, not really dolls, toys for students to look at instead. So finding different ways to bring those materials into the classroom if it's not possible to have the actual material is also just a great way to spark that curiosity and spark that questioning with your students. Including books is also another great way. Finding non-fiction books is just a great way, just a great thing for students to be able to flip through. They can look at the images, you can help them read some of the words, and so that they can, again, either answer some of the questions they might have, it might spark some other questions, and you can find those usually in your library, school library, local library. Epic Books is a great website and app to have, and Epic Books has an amazing collection of nonfiction books. They also have great fiction books, but their collection of nonfiction books is really fantastic. So Epic Books has some great books for you to choose from. You could have different selections of books on the app for students to look through. You could read some of those books for your with your students as well. So finding those and gathering those materials is, probably the hardest part of, I guess, of setting up a provocation, because I also like to include things like a clipboard and some paper, some pencil crayons and pencils and crayons and markers for students to use to draw and to write down what they're noticing. I also like to include magnifying glasses if it's something that they can take a closer look at. I've mentioned this before. I have a USB microscope that's able to plug into my laptop, and we can take pictures of some of the close-up microscopic pictures that we take of our materials, and they save to my laptop, so then we're able to take a closer look at them as a whole group as well, and we can print them out and we can use them in different ways. Magnifying glasses, microscope, anything else that students might be able to use to explore the materials is great. A lot of the times we end up using our hands to take a look. I also love to include, I have this pack of labeling provocation posters and cards. And so there's a whole bunch of different sets in this pack, from space to sunflowers, apples, pumpkins, everything. I've included a whole bunch of them in there, and I keep adding to it every time one of my students is asking about something else. I usually add to it as well. And so I'll link that in the show notes if it's something you want to take a look at. But I also include those. It helps build our vocabulary and our understanding around the things that we're noticing and naming in the provocation. And so and it also helps them when they are being scientists and like writing out their observations and writing what they see. They can use the actual vocabulary, use the actual terms associated with that item to label their picture. There's like a poster that has the item labeled. So if it's a sunflower, it might have like seeds and leaf, petal, stem. I can't remember exactly what's labeled on the sunflower one, but then there's also cards associated with each of those labels that I cut out and put on the table. So there might be a deeper explanation of, what the petals do for a sunflower, what the seeds do for a sunflower. So if a student has a question about the seeds or is questioning something about the seeds, the card might provide some explanations or spark some further discussion for the students as well. Again, I'll link that in the show notes for you. It's like an ever expanding, product, just because I keep, every time I think of something new, like I'm working on adding dandelion to it right now. Every time I think of something new, I just keep adding to it, and it uses real pictures as well, which I think is important for this. And yeah, that's always added to my provocations. It helps provide that literacy lens, that vocabulary, that deeper understanding, and spark some of that curiosity for my students. So that's basically like what is set out at the table, how I get to picking what I'm putting at the table, how I'm planning it. The thing with these provocations is that I'm not planning them like way in advance. Like I'm not saying like the second week of October, that's when I'm doing my pumpkin provocation. It doesn't necessarily work like that. Instead, it's like some days it's the day before, we're like, oh, these kids are really interested in wasps or whatever it might be. And the next day we might have a provocation for wasps set up for our students. Like they can be like really quick turnaround times. Students sometimes surprise us with what they're interested in. And all of a sudden they're really interested in something that comes out of left field. And so you're putting together provocations to expand their learning around this, to deepen their understanding, because if they're interested in it right now, it doesn't mean they're going to be interested in it next week, right? So we want to make sure that we're being timely for these provocations as much as you can. You won't be able, like, I'm saying this, but I want to remind you, like, you won't be able to do a provocation or set up something for everything that the students ask you questions about. Like, that's impossible. We have 3 and 4 year olds. Like, they have questions about every single thing. Like, you want to pick things that they're asking deep questions about, that they're really wondering, that they're coming to over and over again, or something that they've gotten really excited about. Like, you're not picking every single little thing that they're asking a question about to make a provocation around, or to, like, that not everything is like an inquiry that you have to do with your students. Instead, you kind of have to use your discretion as an educator to, like, understand your students. And once you kind of know your students and understand them, you can really see what excites them and what you want to really go forward with, or what, you know is just going to be a passing little fad that they're just interested in for the moment. So I want to put that out there. Don't follow every single little thing that they do. The other part of the provocation is, like, what do you as an educator do once you've set up these materials? So I've set up these materials. I have this provocation set up with some tulips. I have my cards. I have my poster. I have the materials. My job as an educator is not done, though. Now that the students are coming to the provocation, your job as an educator is to listen and provide some modeling to your students, especially at the beginning of the school year. Like, I put out materials at the beginning of the school year. Students probably have no idea what to do with these materials, right? But I can be a model for them to, like, show them how to be curious about things and how to ask questions. So I'm going to be sitting at that table. I'm going to be drawing and writing and asking questions about things, looking through the books and pointing out things that I'm noticing, asking my students questions. I really want to model this type of inquiry type of behavior, this questioning behavior, for my students, because it's not something that's just going to happen, especially at the beginning of the school year. Like, your students might not feel comfortable. They might not have the vocabulary. They might not have the oral language skills to be able to do this yet. But if you model that for them, it becomes so much more, they can bring out so much more rich learning in the experience for the students. And I found that at the beginning of the year, I was a lot more involved. I was sitting there a lot more, pointing out things a lot more. Towards the end of the year, once we had done quite a few of these provocations, like, the things that students were coming out with on their own and coming to show me and talk to me about, it just blew my mind. Like, we started at the beginning of the school year with, like, a provocation with the sunflowers. I think that was one of the earliest ones we did. And then with students just kind of picking at the sunflowers, they weren't really doing, like, they were asking some questions, but it was mostly a lot of me and my teaching partner just going over there and talking about the things that we were seeing and kind of modeling that. But then by the end of the year, we had a daffodil or a tulip provocation set up for the students, and, like, they were coming up to us with, like, labeled drawings of the daffodil and how they had added sun and water to the picture because that's what plants need in order to survive and grow. And, like, we're talking about life cycles and the things that they noticed inside the flower, and I was just like, where did all this come from? Like, they just had developed all of this deep understanding, and they had, like, looked at the flower and really thought about, you know, how we could have provided things for this flower to, like, grow in our classroom environment. And I was just blown away by the language that they were using, the vocabulary, but also how they had, like, really thought about this plant and the different things that it needed. So don't just think that you're setting things up and then, like, walking away from it, and then somehow naturally students are going to start, like, some students will. Some students will always have questions and will always be curious about things, but for the most part, like, being that model for them is really important, and, like, teaching them how to question and how to think things through, how to find answers to their questions, like, that becomes a really important part of your role as an educator. Your role as an educator as well can be to document the learning that is happening. if it's something that they're really interested in, okay, so this might be like some kind of inquiry learning that is happening. How can we expand this? What are they really interested in? What's like the big picture that we can guide the learning towards? That is my job as an educator, is that once the students are interested in, I want to continue to expand on this, this learning, this curiosity, this wonderment, and keep that going for them. And so I'm documenting what's happening at that provocation. I can also be around to help them notice and name any of the learning that is happening. So you're still having an active role as an educator after a provocation is set up. It just might look different depending on your students, depending on the time of the year. Sometimes I like to be involved and sitting with my students, like when I brought out the USB microscope and I could sit with them and show it to them and how to use it. But then other times I like to sit back kind of a little bit further away and just listen to the things that they're talking about and listen to how they're interacting with each other and the questions they're asking to each other. Because, you know, when an adult becomes involved in the conversation, sometimes those shift the conversation. So, you know, you play around with, am I going to be sitting with them? Are they good on their own and I can walk away and just listen to what's happening? Can they bring me some of their learning afterwards? And your role as an educator isn't just to sit on the perimeter of the learning that's happening. You're kind of flowing in and out of it as needed. And, you know, sometimes there's other things happening in the classroom. Like, you just can't sit there. That's fine as well. Like, there's other things that go on. But you, as an educator, are going to flow in and out of that learning, in and out of the provocations, so that you can understand what's happening, so that you can, you know, model, notice and name the learning, you can expand learning, you can ask your own questions, you can provide support and show them how to find answers to their questions. All those things that you can do as an educator can happen after the provocation has been set up. Again, sometimes a provocation is set up and students are like loving everything about it, and you can keep going with that kind of that learning. And other times it's a big dud and you're like, okay, this is something I thought they'd really be interested in. Clearly not. Let's move on with our lives. And that's the end of it for that year. But maybe next year you'll find the same material sparks a lot of curiosity for your students. And so, yeah, I just don't be discouraged if some of the provocations, not duds, that's not the kind of thing that are not as exciting to some students. Like, every year I have students that are interested in different things, and it just depends on the students and the year, and that's perfectly okay. So I want to thank you so much for joining me for this week's episode of the podcast. I will link everything in the show notes for you, including a blog post so that you can see some of the provocations that I have set up over the years. I will link to that pack of provocation and labeling cards and posters. And don't forget that the Teachers Pay Teachers bonus sale is on the 30th and 31st of August. Use the code BTSBONUS22 at checkout to get up to 25% off everything in my store, including that provocation and labeling pack I was just talking about, and including any bundles that you might need for the whole school year. It's a great time to save. I will put links for all of that in the show notes for you. You can also go follow me on Instagram. I post all my updates. I share lots of provocations that I've set up throughout the year. If you need, you know, some ideas, or, you know, you want to spark some learning in your students and you want to think about different things that you can do as well, I share lots of stuff like that over on my Instagram. So make sure you go and follow me there at Creative Kindergarten Blog on TPT. It'll be linked in the show notes. I want to thank you so much for joining me. Make sure you're following me on whatever podcast platform you're listening on so that you know whenever I put out new episodes, which is usually every Tuesday. I hope you have a great day, and I will talk to you all next time. Bye.